Welcome to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Leadership and management are about betterment, betterment of yourself, others, and profit for the business, matching the skills of workers and managers with the changing face of farming is as demanding as it is important. Post-Brexit and post-subsidies, farming is a different world to that with which many are familiar. The chairman of AHDB, Nicholas Sophia, when recently speaking at an Institute of Agricultural Management conference, he commented that businesses who are prepared for and embrace change will be able to exploit the opportunities that always come with periods of evolution in the industry. This podcast is the second time we've looked at the topic of leadership and management, and this time we're moving the debate on with people at the sharp end. I'm John Bates, and in this episode, we talk to farming guests who have embraced the subject and are leading the commitment. Mark Campbell is leading the panel discussion. Over to you, Mark.
Thank you, John, and welcome to our guests, Phil Halehead from Norbrook Genetics from up north in Cumbria, who's joining us live at HQ here in Stoneleigh. And then we're pleased to be joined also by Phil Nash, live from his Brightman's farm down in sunny Sussex, and he's dialed in to have these discussions. On this second AgriLeader podcast, where we're going to delve a little bit more into how we can implement the Bridging the Gap report and what it has meant to both of these producers. So both of you, Phils, are at very different stages in terms of your leadership and management journeys, but that's deliberate, and that's why we brought you into the podcast today. We wanted to highlight that there's no wrong ways or right ways in terms of developing yourself, your people and your business. And we strive to continue to better your development of leadership and management skills is critical as we move forward. So just before we get into the nuts and bolts of the questioning, could you both introduce yourself and give us a bit of an idea of what you're doing farming wise, where you are in the world and what stage you're at in terms of your journey? Phil Halehead, over to you.
Thank you very much, Mark, and thank you to the AHDB for inviting me down here today. Quite an interesting journey for me. We'll get into some of the nuts and bolts of it, but fundamentally, for those who don't know me, a dairy farmer, third generation farming family. We're milking just short of 300 dairy cows. We're on a Tesco Arla contract. Quite a number of years ago now, developed what was a hobby, developed into a business, and is now called Norbrook Genetics. We have a global genetics reach with that. It's beef genetics, predominantly for dairy farmers, and specialising in beef genetics to the pedigree industry as well. And that has actually given me a little bit of space, a little bit of time, and travelling to meet lots of different people. I think that's certainly part of the important bit of my story that has given me time, which is something we'll no doubt delve into later.
Brilliant. Thank you, Phil. What about yourself, Phil Nash? Introduce yourself.
Hello, Mark. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm in a partnership and a family partnership in a mixed farming business, predominantly dairy. We're milking similar number of cows to Phil, 270 cows on a Sainsbury's Arla contract, all year round calving. And we do a few other things on the farm as well. We've got some beef production, some arable, and increasing number of business industrial lets on the farm. So there's a focus which has to cover a number of enterprises, but predominantly dairy farming is where we're at. Historically, a family farming business. I'm in partnership with my two brothers now. We're fourth generation on the farm, and we are employing a range of people on the farm. And I came through Harper Adams Agricultural College 20 years ago and worked abroad for a number of years in New Zealand. And most of my time has been spent back on the home farm. And my journey, I suppose, I'm increasingly concerned about staff retention and instilling a sense of responsibility amongst my staff. And I've not had any formal leadership and management training, but I'm really passionate about trying to improve where I'm at and in teach some of my staff some techniques as well. So that's where we're at.
Brilliant. Thank you, Phil. That's really insightful. So as you're all both aware, our industry is probably facing the biggest changes of the century, or maybe even mankind. And there's definitely no silver bullet to solve those. We saw from our previous podcast covering the Bridging the Gap report that development of leadership and management skills for everyone, that's not just the leaders, that's everyone within this industry, from the grassroots, the foundation, all the way up, is an extremely important cog within a large machine to overcome these challenges. Please, as we're sat here, could you, Phil, Halhead, share your sort of personal development journeys within leadership and management, why you think we've asked you to sit in this podcast?
Well, really interesting one, Mark, and it quite diverse set of things, very much like the other Phil on this podcast. We've got several different things going on around our businesses. I'll refer back quickly to the report we did. As a family, we like to review what we're doing at various stages, maybe not too often, but every 5 to 10 years, we bring somebody in and we think about what we're doing and is it the right path for the whole family, the business, and ultimately the team that we've got around us that work with us, and bringing them in. And I mean, it's nice that the family have a plan, and that in itself is maybe sometimes unusual in our industry, that the family's all facing in one direction, but also to key in with my key people in the team, who, and I do talk about team a lot, anybody that's worked with me will laugh when they hear me say that, because they actually pull my leg about saying the word team at every opportunity. But the report we did back in the year 2000, which is now 21 years ago, at the age of 28, it states here, Philip is too, or one of the weaknesses in our SWOT analysis is Philip is too hands-on and will not allow workers to take control of their tasks. Philip does not delegate well. That Philip that I'm reading about there is, quite honestly, is unrecognisable to what I see in myself today. And I think if we had any of our team members or family members here today, they would actually accuse me of merely the opposite, of being nearly too hands off. And there's a great quote when I went to America looking at leadership. I got a Tesco scholarship in 2014, had 9 hours of recorded interviews, 3 different states in America, and some incredibly interesting businesses, deliberately going into larger businesses for the only reason that when you look at larger businesses, this was 750 cows up to 26,000 cows. You see within those businesses, they've made the mistakes, they've had that journey, and there's some really good learnings. And within a bigger business, they have a bigger team and a bigger requirement to bring in lots of different skill sets and team members. But there was a great sign on a farm wall, farm office wall, that I pulled down and took a photograph of, and it said, before you are a leader, success is all about growing yourself, and when you become a leader, success is all about growing others. And that really encapsulates my thoughts on leadership. Management is, tying the two together can be quite disorientating, because management is very much more about the muddy boots and the day-to-day and the cut and thrust, whereas leadership is much more holistic, a little bit more touchy-feely, for want of a better term, and there's quite a different requirement around leadership as to management. So that would be my early take on those things. The other thing, sorry, to answer the question in full there, would be I have had some formal training in leadership, which I sort of recognise. A lot of this is learnt after my arrival into the dairy farming business and the sort of building of my genetics business. Working away on other farms was an early learning. I think Phil mentioned he'd done the same. Learning to work for somebody when you're on a family farm, it's all too easy, I think, or it has been in the past, to come home and jump straight into the ship that you know and sail it. Well, we've had to both, by the sounds of it, learn to join somebody else's ship and all those challenges. And some of the things you didn't enjoy about that journey on that ship, you try and change I did a 2005 and 2006. I did a Young Dairy Leaders Institute course in Florida, in America with another UK chap. That was all the early learning stuff about personality traits and the way that different characters rub alongside each other and recognizing some of my positives, but also more importantly, some of my negatives. And then I've done a certificate in leadership and management at Lancaster University, interestingly, with no other ag involvement at all. In fact, it wasn't about agriculture, it's purely about leadership. And that's something we may touch on. More recently, the Tesco Scholarship, 12-day visit to America, studying dairy farming businesses at scale. And then in 2018, just before the pandemic, completing a Goldman Sachs business course. So I've had a passion for that ongoing development.
That's really, really interesting and a great journey. Phil, Nash, you're at the start of this journey. And you said a minute ago that you haven't had any formal leadership and management. Have you got any ideas or any plans around where you and potentially your team could where you want to tuck into some of this leadership management development?
I would love to do something more formal. And in many ways, I don't know why that hasn't come across my path, really. I think, as Phil said, you know, part of probably some of my failings are not being hands-off enough on my business. And I think I'm still on the journey where I'm learning to become to become better in that respect. But I definitely like to embrace some more formal training. I think, yeah, I'm not nearly as far down the line as Phil is. But I think in a subjective way, I was looking at Bridging the Gap report and the six highlighted areas. And I feel in many ways I don't score badly in those particular areas, a sort of self-assessment, really. But I'm really keen to improve and learn more. And I think that my business could really benefit from that. And much of what I feel I've learnt is, as Phil just said there, was working for a lot of other people and seeing some of the mistakes that people make and often the mistakes that I've made in the past actually do benefit you going forward. So, and just, you know, I think just in a purely in a way of just improving our own businesses, you know, retaining good staff in agriculture is just paramount at the minute with everything that's going on. So, yes, I definitely want to embrace some training in the future. That's for sure.
No, that's really good to hear. And I suppose just picking up on that, maybe having an idea of a direction or what's on offer or what could be due and what could be suitable for you, maybe offer some kind of self-assessment tool to be able to give you a bit of a steer on where the next step is and where to go to start a bit of a journey like Phil has had. Maybe that's something we need to look into and help you on your way. So just building on that and moving on, a range of experiences that we've highlighted here from quite in depth and quite a number of things which sound really exciting from Phil Haler and then Phil Nash embarking on that journey. Have either of you got any ideas on and what you believe the future benefits are to you as the business owner, to your team, and ultimately business in actually utilising and uptaking on this kind of development? Phil Haler, over to you.
Very interesting, of course. It's essential. It's not, I don't think it's a do you or don't you. Once you step away from what might be classed as a family business, once you accept that there's some great people to bring into your business and finding the right people. And it was interesting, actually, and I'd never thought about it like this before until somebody mentioned it to me last week, that, you know, what is your USP on your farm? What is it that would attract somebody to your business? In fact, I know one chap who and his wife who have just had some professional drone footage of the farm. It's no longer, you know, please apply for this job. It's about the drone flying over the farm, making it look or you know, just showing the farm for what it is. And so there's that wherewithal. And one of the great things I learned from the year on the leadership course at Lancaster University, albeit it was away from ag, was that every single business I partnered with a childcare nursery. She had the misfortune of having to spend a day with me at the Bullstud, but I equally had the great opportunity to go into a childcare nursery and listen to what were effectively young, very young girls who were managing areas of their work and small classrooms of very young children. On a Saturday morning, the leader of that business giving some inspiration to the team, but then asking quite openly for feedback on areas of improvement. And, you know, naively, I thought, well, you know, there's maybe not going to be too many nuggets come from this. And it was unbelievable. They had a few minutes or sort of 20 minutes each in a corner with a whiteboard. And the things that jumped out for change was incredible. So you can, the learning points everywhere, but the one module that I found from the leadership course that really was invaluable was solutions focus. So we think about, Phil, here as well, there's always problems there, and it can be in the business, it can be your personal life, it can be in any form. But when you change your mindset from thinking of things as a problem to actually where's the solution, and then empowering your team to think the same way, if anybody can take away one nugget from this podcast, please think about solutions focus and not dramatizing the problems that arise. And in a busy dairy farm, in any busy business, that arises. And another quick one, if you don't mind, is we listened to Sir Chris Bonington at the Lancaster University. He's actually very deeply involved at Lancaster. He talked animatedly about his first trip to the top of Everest and conquering the summit. But then he compared that with his leadership style more latterly, and taking subsequent trips up Everest, he only ever went to base camp below the peak following his first expedition. And the learning there is that as a leader, you mustn't want to put the flag in the top of the mountain and take all the credit and all the victory. It's really important to get your team to base camp below the summit and make sure that they take some real credit and some thrill and some opportunity from getting to the summit on their own with some support. So that's a little nugget to think about.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. That's a really, really good little nugget there. Phil Nash, is there anything that you're perceiving benefits-wise by starting on gaining some of this insight in leadership management for yourself? Any particular areas that you think might benefit you personally and may benefit the team or ultimately the business?
I think personally me, I have a personality trait that needs to be battled against constantly I'm two hands on the business. I at risk of micromanaging people, and so I feel like I know that I've got self-improvement to sort of overcome before I empower my staff, I feel. And you know, going back to what Phil said, I think that, you know, this isn't a choice, I don't think, within our industry, because unless we embrace this, unless people improve their leadership and management skills, this isn't sustainable at the moment. And I feel also with generational changes, and young people at the moment do not have the same, they don't have the same outlook as two generations ago. They don't, and we cannot treat people the same as what, say, my father or my grandfather did. I'm not saying that's wrong. At the time, it wasn't wrong. But I feel that now people need to be managed in a different way, because we will lose people from our industry. We won't progress as an industry, and our individual businesses won't progress. And I suppose another thing, on a personal note, for my business, just with the range of enterprises we've got, even though dairy is still at the forefront of our income, I need to empower people to take responsibility and to have enthusiasm for a common goal. Unless I do that, the business just isn't going to progress, and we're going to stagnate, and it won't be sustainable in the future. just on our, in terms of our dairy, you know, we are, we're being pushed along by, in a good way, by our retail contracts, and such that to become more efficient, to become more carbon efficient, to become, to produce more from less. And that requires a, you know, a more and more intense management, but we need our staff to take those responsibilities on, because we can't, as individuals, we can't spin plates to the degree to build our businesses, to build enterprises, but the, as human beings, we can only do so much. So we need to, we need to share the load as such. That's the way I see it, and in terms of my business.
That's really good. And I think just the, a couple of little things I've put up, I think you're already recognising some of those points, which is the starting point to be able to push forward. And the other point is about adapting. Society is changing so rapidly, and people have different expectations and different challenges. And I think you're very, very right that we need to adapt our methods of managing people to be able to better the business. I was only speaking to a friend yesterday. She's a senior air stewardess for Virgin Atlantic. She is very, very fortunate that she has survived right the way through the pandemic and hasn't lost her job. They made a lot of people redundant or put them in a holding list. Now, currently today, as we speak, there's 4,000 vacancies at Virgin Atlantic. Wow. The point I think you make about us changing and adapting is going to be even more crucial, because it's not just our industry that is looking to fuel their business with people. All the other industries.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Mark. I think one thing I've driving down the M6 this morning, had a little time to think about some of this stuff. And the one thing that I think when I look at the team members I've got, I've sort of reverse engineered the whole thing. So it's actually a little bit less about what I need and what we need as a family and as a business. The first sort of few questions that that get asked are, what do you want from us? And you know, thinking 10 years, maybe 10 years ago or a little bit further back again, it was more about what we need. Yeah. And now I'm very flexible with the approach to the team. You know, we have a very young team. Nick, my team leader, herds manager, he's been with me for 14 years now, and he understands the business, but him and I are very similar in the way we think, although Nick is very focused on the family, so he likes to switch off and go home at night. He's not, you know, he needs to leave the business behind, and we encourage that. So we did adapt quite early on with Nick in the approach for the time he needs. Now the younger team members, it's very much about flexibility. It's certainly not about, and it's a maximum of sort of, let's say 50, 55 hours, which still sounds horrendous compared with some other industries. But if there's anybody out there listening to this still trying to get 70, 80 hours or more out of team members, that, you know, that's really, that's got to be left behind. So it's very much reversing the conversation. What are you joining us for? What do you want? You know, do you want a day off during the week? And, you know, all those sort of questions. So it's that flexible approach that seems to be much more required than it did just a handful of years ago.
No, excellent. There's some really, really, really good points to put up there, that flexibility piece and that adaptability piece, and understanding what the individual wants from you is absolutely critical. So let's just think about, IHDB have commissioned this Bridging the Gap report 2030 to give an understanding of the leadership and management requirements for our industry as we move through the next 10 years. You guys have both had a look at the report. Firstly, what are your initial feelings and interpretations, and where do you both individually think the industry needs to go in the short term? What are the biggest wins that we could do? And then secondly, it highlights some mega trends, some challenges our industry is facing. So whether that be the increased use of technology and data, whether that's adapting to changing consumer preferences and interests, and of course, it's that continual driver for a lesser impact on the environment and to come to carbon neutral. What are your feelings and thoughts about the report? Phil Nash, over to you first.
I thought it was pretty revolutionary, actually. I haven't read anything like that before, and it kind of blew my mind a bit. But it appeared to me that there's unequivocal link between your leadership and management skills and what you can instill in your staff and in your team, and towards, you know, and a link between that and the success and profitability of business. So, you know, for the sustainability of our industry, it's I think people need to read this. And these six areas of research into the leadership and management were really interesting to me, and just I enjoyed reading that and sort of thinking about how I approach people and leadership and management. So that was pretty amazing. The sort of mega trends were in many ways they were a little bit scary in terms of what we've come up against, but that's happening. And actually a few of them, I feel like they're already happened, or they are happening already, and we are adapting to them, whether we like it or not, they're happening. So yeah, so that was pretty interesting, really.
Excellent. Bill, what about yourself?
Yeah, very much the same as Phil. Very comprehensive report, very well put together. I jumped straight actually into page 58 and not saying jumped into it, that was the bit that I highlighted, and it was the implications for management and leadership. And there was a talk there about navigation rather than a need to conquer. And I think that is absolutely right. It's probably navigating through an agricultural landscape at the moment without any leadership skill is akin to flying an aeroplane without the instruments. You can probably get to where you want to in fine weather and in normal times, but when you hit some turbulent weather or you haven't got extra manpower or people power, should we say, on board, then you're going to get into some sort of trouble. The other thing that came out strongly for me was the misinformation and differences of values, beliefs and opinions of others. And that's outside our industry. So one thing I've managed to do with my two young boys, Max and Angus, is sit down and watch Jeremy Clarkson. I don't know that it's all suitable for an 8 and a 9-year-old, but nevertheless. Somebody like that, I've said for long enough, and I'm forgive me, I'm sort of going off on a tangent slightly here, but I think it's a useful opportunity to put it on the table. Jeremy Clarkson has single-handedly done more for our industry in an episode of Clarkson's Farm than Countryfile or anybody else has managed over several sort of decades. And I said a while ago, and I stand by it today, if we could garner sort of £3 million worth of investment, we need three spokespeople. I don't know whether we'd manage to afford Clarkson for that sort of money, but somebody of that ilk. Three spokespeople, one in Scotland, one in England and one in Wales, and somebody to cover Northern Ireland. Roughly pay them £1 million each per year to be really good out there and up front. That would equate today, ladies and gentlemen, to £375 for each dairy producer. Now, if somebody came to me with a plan and it was going to cost me £375 to promote the industry, to put us firmly back in the driving seat and to promote the good bits of our what we do and the solutions we provide as an industry, I would grasp that with both hands. But the report also on page 58 highlights an extremely good book. And I always think we all don't have much time to read a book because we're all incredibly busy. Aeroplanes gave me that luxury when I was flying around pre-pandemic. But Stephen Covey's describes in his hugely popular and influential book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That book must go on every leader's bookshelf. Seek first to understand and then to be understood. So there's some really good stuff there. And then like Phil Nash, very impressed with the table in there on page 61, the segmented leadership, growth mindset, resilience, inspirational leadership, decision making, entrepreneurial and profit focused mindsets, and detail conscious. So really understanding where you sit, where the weaknesses are within your skill set, and then, you know, probably seeking to find some some sort of guide and help with improving the areas you're weak in. In very much the same way, I value the accountants in my team and the bank manager. And, I'm much more big picture and less about some of the detail. And that's one of my failings. But from that, I garner the right people around me to help me move forward. So that was a recognizing factor there. And I think there was also interesting in section on page 64, there was a summary, and to lead others in the changing world includes the interaction not just with employees but also with family members, and you need an extended network of individuals who can support the success of the enterprise. So bringing people in, it's not always about you having the expertise. It's about recognising the people in the industry, and maybe as an AHDB, as an organisation, can flag these people up. And I think there's a really good bit here about bringing people from outside the industry to give a fresh overview of where we're going wrong. I think worth highlighting as well, there was a paragraph here, margins are always going to be tight, as food production will always be an endeavour where one supply chain competes with at least one other. And so recognising that there isn't always going to be extra money there to do the things we need to do. Really comprehensive report, Mark.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for that. Just a quick one before we move on to the next piece. Just quickly, your both opinions. How do we professionalise our industry? You've both come up with some really interesting points, and there's some huge numbers of challenges down the track. What do we need to do to become a little bit more of a professionalised, recognised industry?
A cynical person would say we need bigger margins in our food, in the money that we receive for our produce. But sort of looking at the health and safety side of things, I was chatting to someone else about in the building industry the other day, and just in terms of how they professionalise their health and safety and their attitude towards that, and they can pass the cost on. So there is a financial side to this, but at the same time, something I wrote down because we have a lot of students here working on the farm. It's just the students that come out the back of the colleges, how prepared are they for people management and some of the aspects of the report, and how aware are they of leadership and management within the industry that they're entering? And actually, I'd say that it's a bit poor. Actually, they may be they may be starting out their careers, but the colleges don't seem to be installing an awful lot of leadership and management skills in our young people. Whether that's an attitude thing, whether it's a generational thing where farming is, in the past has been a lot about respecting your elders, probably a bit too much, and just and doing what they say. But certainly I feel like our colleges could improve to help the professionalisation of, and the attitude of people in agriculture, for sure.
So kind of being more inclusive with this kind of, which technical development, don't get me wrong, is very, very important, but actually trying to incorporate or embed some of these traits that we've identified within delivery to start that journey.
I think the technical side of agriculture is it's obviously huge, isn't it? Because we're all got a huge skill set, and we've got to know everything about agronomy, about livestock management, health, and thing. But increasingly, if we want people, we want to improve the professionalism or industry, leadership and management's got to start at an earlier age, I think, personally.
Brilliant. That's a very good point, Phil, about colleges and I think I actually look back, we're both on aligned contracts, and there'll be non-aligned producers listening to this podcast thinking, well, it's all right for them, and I think that comes back to your financial piece as well. What we've found actually is and I'll openly admit it here and now, that some of the changes that we've had to go through and some of the things we've done initially were quite challenging. But once you've protocoled the system into the business, once the team accept that You know, there is a different way of doing things. I think overall, we are a better business because of it. And I look back just say 10 or 15 years again, and we were really chunking some big problems and dealing with some biggish stuff. Now we're very much tweaking around the edges and trying to improve, you know, improving and lowering our antibiotic use and more selective dry cow therapy. We're group housing calves. We've got better calf health. It's a better place to work, quite frankly. And so, and also I can see our team that when we run the team meetings, it's not, again, I try and avoid me talking too much, which probably sounds hard to believe. But we very much bring in the nutritionist to talk about what we're going to do on the feeding side. We bring the vet in, and really all our suppliers, I challenge them to be a very intrinsic part of our team. And when there's a problem, I don't need to be on the farm. It's a case of, okay, well, on Tuesday afternoon when the vet's there, let's just go through those numbers. The vets are very good. Our vets are very proactive. So we're actually looking at the data, at the numbers, and that guides our decision making. So there's a lot of people around this industry who, we've really, if you were to snapshot it and bring somebody from Planet Zog, sort of, he was here 10 years ago and now reviewing the industry, I think we don't credit ourselves enough. But Philip, your point about margins is monstrous. And look, you know, for far too long, we've been scrabbling about, and I have a slide on one of the presentations I do, a pile of pennies. You know, we spend an incredible, an inordinate amount of time looking for half a p here and a penny there, when most people drop a penny on the floor and keep walking. And I think that's got to change. And what we're seeing at the minute is a once in a lifetime change in food prices, call it food price inflation. But if the processors and the rest of the supply chain are serious about what they want for the future of food production in the UK, then the margins have to stay on the farm, and certainly a little bit more of it to enable investment, investment in training, investment in resources, investment in, facilities that, quite frankly, you'd be proud to bring consumers around and show them this is why you're paying a little bit more for your food in the UK, because we have the highest welfare standards and our teams are proud to produce the food that you eat. And you can't get away from that.
No, that's some really, really good points. And I think just building on that development, we've established from the report that only 0.37% of the industry are engaging in any form of formal leadership and management training, that there's still room to continue improving. And that point about margins, massively, massively important. So with that, thinking of that, and from your experiences and reasonings, where does the industry go to look for ideas, methods and ways to increase our leadership and management capacities within the UK? Have you got any ideas? Phil Nash.
I think probably by reading the Bridging the Gap report, a lot of the conclusions, but a lot of the leadership management training needs to, it's a way to encourage farmers to engage in this, is to make it more agriculturally specific. But actually, really, I think maybe we've got to look at other industries and sort of get some techniques from them in terms of industries that are ahead of ours in leadership and management. But it takes an open mind, I think, for farmers and leaders to take that information and adapt it into our industry. So it sort of goes back to, are you open-minded enough to do this in the first place, I think. But yeah, certainly I feel like there are other industries out there that we could learn from and use for our own benefit, really.
Yeah, and I'd agree with Phil on that. And that cross-industry fertilisation is important. I tend to, and again, when I do get the chance to read odd books, inspirational leaders from outside of ag, actually hearing Sir Chris Bonington in a room and some of these inspirational leaders who, you know, especially when they're very open and honest about the harsh realities of where they started life and where they are now, you know, some people would say, well, it's, you know, it's okay for them, but they all have a journey that they've made. They've all got stories and tips and tricks to for their success. And it, particularly the very brutally open and honest leaders outside of ag and maybe inspirational leaders within ag. So putting that practical approach in and the way people learn is completely different. So I enjoy listening to somebody on a stage for an hour about their inspirational journey, whereas other people might quite like sort of a detailed report to go through and study and take and absorb. So it's finding multiple levels of input. And I think everybody's journey is slightly different. You know, some people are naturally better at this stuff than others. And I think that's maybe a learning. So I've been in a business not long ago that very shy, very quiet sort of leader who really, you know, his worst him and his wife, actually, their worst nightmare is to sit at the top of a table and talk about this to a team. And so therefore they brought somebody else in to facilitate it. And I think if I did one thing in 2014, if I hadn't been a busy dairy farmer and with my Norbrett Genetics hat on, I think I would have come back from America and tried to set up some management leadership consultancy business. And I believe there are people now doing that. And Kite would be instance, of course. So bring those people in. You know, again, don't try and do something that you're not either comfortable with or you're not good at. You know, bring somebody into your business and in effect you're bringing in a chairperson to mediate as well. So if there are, as there very often is, some little issues to deal with, then it can be that individual meetings with team members can take place and they feel quite comfortable about talking to somebody out with your business as well. And then the chairman reports back to you as the leader and says, look, this is where the areas for improvement are.
And I think there are two very, very, very important points there. One from Phil Nash in terms of sourcing stuff from outside of the industry. I had the privilege of listening to the global strategy director of Shell Oil a couple of weeks ago at a conference. And she is trying business to become carbon net zero and the majority of their income coming from renewable energy. We'll try and tell a group of petroleum petrochemists that they're not going to have a job in a few years and they've got to become more environmentally sound. That's a complete change. But I think the point that you made, Phil, in terms of everyone's different. Everyone needs to interpret information in different ways and different manners. And we need to have a better understanding. It's not bad to know what you're good at and what you're bad at. And like, I'm exactly that person you just described. I'm not the one that wants to stand up and have the rah-rah and be in centre stage. But I know that, so you need to be able to understand that and create a solution to be able to solve that and move it forward.
Probably not the best analogy, Mark, but to get over alcoholism, you have to recognise that you're an alcoholic. Yeah. and in the same way, you know, you have to recognise, you have to be quite vulnerable. And there's a lot of the thing I noticed from my travel in America, particularly on those bigger units, was whilst you, before you stepped onto those units, you would imagine a flag waving leader who is quite dominant and strong in his or her own way. It was actually completely the opposite. They're very, you know, we were walking through a 3,000 cow dairy unit and Mark Crave, the Crave brothers in Wisconsin, quite a famous herd and family, he puts his arm around Ernesto, the Hispanic guy, just come back into work after 2 or 3 weeks away from the business. Hey, Ernesto, how's the little baby? Yeah. So that humility, that sort of, you've got to have a genuine passion for people and caring, and they need to mean as much to you as your family members.
Most absolutely couldn't. Well, we've covered a huge amount of ground so far, and it's been really, really good. Let's try and wrap this up with one last question. So we're in quite an interesting scenario here. Phil Halehead, huge journey in really interesting business and some really insightful points. Phil Nash, great business, great team, starting to dip your toe in the water of understanding some of these things and where you need to develop. We've got a bit of an opportunity here. Phil Halehead, what advice would you give Phil Nash in terms of as he's embarking on this journey? where should he start? What should he listen to? What would be the one nugget, the one thing to start the journey you could?
Well, from what I've heard, and you know, I've only just met Phil this morning here and via the screen on the computer, but you know, Phil's recognised the need to change. He's embracing that. He's conscious that he wants to keep the good people in his team and grow them and attract new people. So, you know, he's a long way down that road. And how, Phil, what you know, I guess in the same way I am, I'm, you know, it sounds like I'm obviously further down that journey, but still lots to learn, you know, adapting to millennials coming into my team and thinking about, you know, they're going to look at me and think, wow, this grey haired, you know, sort of nearly 50 year old who, you know, I have to meet them on their journey and really understand them in a better way. The one thing I think that I would say is, and again, it's a quote from a very interesting family in Lancaster, Wisconsin that I visited. And they explained to me that you should really define your wildly important goal. So day to day, you have a very busy business, you have busy family life. There's a lot going on around everything every day. Define your wildly important goal. And the air traffic control scenario comes into play. So near, not far from here today, Birmingham Airport, we're thinking about the airports getting back to normal. The air traffic controller, of which you are the leader in your business, you're the air traffic controller effectively, lots of aeroplanes taking off, lots landing, but you really only have one challenge right now, and that is to land the plane that is just 30 seconds from the runway. That is your wildly important goal right now. And so really focusing in on what's important, try not to take too many things on at one time, and focus in on one or two key areas. And once you've landed that plane, focus on the next aeroplane you're bringing in to land.
Brilliant, thank you. So Bill Nash, put it in your court, with Phil Halehead sat in front of you or down the line on online, what would the one question you'd ask him in terms of how to help, from his experience, how to help you on your journey?
I suppose with the people coming into my business and potential, you know, potential leaders and, you know, helping me with my sort of goals, you know, how do you weigh up the importance of nature versus nurture? In the fact that we've had people coming into the business who haven't had an easy start in life, who perhaps haven't had a great upbringing, and their values are different. So at what stage do you feel like you've done what you can with somebody? You know, and how do you, I suppose it's a $1 million question, how do you gauge the cutoff? With you've done enough for that person, you can that's their limit, or do you feel that everybody has the potential to be an ultimate leader?
Now I think that's a really insightful question, and look, you know, I'm sat here and maybe people think, oh well, you know, Phil retains all of his team and I've done all this training and gosh, you know, isn't life easy? We've a really good girl just leaving our business now. She has some slight personal health issues that she's dealing with, but it isn't just that. It was, you know, there was maybe some other little bits as well that meant that she needed to move on and felt her time was right. She's given a lot to our business. When I visited Jim Ostrom in Milk Source in America, they're they're now over 30,000 cows. And I think they're heading towards 40 or even 50,000 cows as a business, a very corporate operation. He talked very openly in the 40 minutes I had with him about culture training. And you think about the diversity of teams that they get to there, it's only very similar to what we're dealing with, Phil. So being very certain about what the culture is in your business and thinking about what it is that you need from the team and not being frightened to, you know, have the branded workwear, not being frightened to, you know, think about what it is that and not confusing too many areas. So maybe two or three key things that you require and that are the nuts and bolts of who you are as a family, who you are as a business. And that really, something people can take home with them and be proud of. But going back to the more challenging backgrounds of certain team members and that sort of thing, It's always disappointed me, actually, how we've brought people in and I've talked to them very openly about how we'd like to help them to, you know, be part of this team, to progress, to train them so that possibly they outgrow our business as well. And yet their inability to see that and grasp it, you know, has sort of disappointed a little bit as well. So I think you've got to be very, just do the best you can. But also not beat yourself up when they have to move on, or they move on through their own choices, or whether they, you know. So I think it's just being quite broad and open about that. And nice to bring people in who you can, you think you're going to improve, and if they can, it's the horse to water analogy, isn't it? That you can only show them the water, but if they don't want to drink it, well, yeah, that's a tough gig.
Excellent. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. There are some really interesting discussions, points, and hopefully that's helped our listeners give a bit more clarity about how we can start and where we can go. I think for me, a couple of the take-home points is that there's no right and wrong way of embarking on leadership and management development. It's very, very personal to both the individual on it and the business that they're within. I think the other key point is to start small, is to focus in on a key area where you want to develop and work on that, and don't eat the cake all in one go. And it's to be open and honest and look outside of the industry and everywhere for those opportunities to develop yourself. AHDB hopefully will be a part of that. Please have a look at our AHDB AgriLeader website, ahdb.org.uk/AgriLeader. And if you want any more details, get in contact with me or Isaac or Amy with our contacts there. John, back to you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Mark. Well chaired. That was a fascinating discussion, and I'm sure our listeners will have enjoyed that. Thank you very much for sharing your stories, gentlemen. And if I may say, the Bridging the Gap report and the work that Mark and his colleagues are doing is a great example of the value that AHDB can add and helps levy payers succeed. So good job, Mark, and the same to your colleagues. So thank you to our guests, Phil Nash and Phil Holhead. You mentioned, Phil, the seven habits of highly effective people. I've got a copy of that book in my hand as we speak. There's well over 15 million copies of that sold. So I'm not sure we're supposed to advertise, but anyway, that probably is a book that's worth a read. And thank you for chairing that, Mark. My thanks also to podcast producer Miriam Druitt. If you've got any comments about this podcast or ideas for future episodes, please contact us via the AHDB website, or you can email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.
Every day, British farming is facing new challenges. At AHDB, we're here to help. We invest in your future by delivering work that moves our industry forward. We're here to fund research, share knowledge, and grow markets. But it's time for a fresh start and a more open conversation. We need your voice on how we spend your levy. In April 2022, you'll get the chance to help set the direction for AHDB. Register before 31st of March, and together we can shape the future of British farming. Visit ahdb.org.uk/shapethefuture.